Blog Talk Radio.
TM Hyman Live Talk Radio Show. TM Hyman Live Talk Radio Show. TM Hyman Live Talk Radio Show. Talk radio show.
Talk, look, mama, don't be basic. All that talent you got, girl, don't you waste it. The way you wobble and jiggle, the way you shake it. All that cake, I wanna taste it. I'm calling out a word today, I'm out of play sick. You ain't ever done it on any spaceship. And he got your body bending, looking like you shake you. OMG, girl, you don't make sense. So look, mama, don't be basic. All that talent you got, girl, don't you waste it. The way you wobble and jiggle, the way you shake it. All that cake, I wanna taste it. I'm calling out a word today, I'm out of play sick. You ain't ever done it on the innie in the spaceship. And he got your body bending, looking like you shake you. OMG, girl, you don't make sense. The way you move your body, sort of like a snake did. Ooh, girl, you ain't nothing to play with. Every time I get a piece of you, I savor it. I can't deny you my favorite. All I can eat when you catering. Can't get enough for your flavoring. Girl, you the best, no debating it. Ain't nothing left over, I ain't saving shit. Hey, I want it right now. Headlights special with the top down. They watching now, give them something to talk about. They can put on my shoe, but they can't walk them out. Shawty won't give me two, they cost a couple thousand. You ain't got it to get it, so what you talk about? I just play my position and know it hold around. And every time that I eat it, I go a couple rounds. So, little mama, don't be basic. All that talent you got, girl, don't you waste it. The way you wobble and jiggle, the way you shake it. All that cake, I wanna taste it. I'm calling up a word today, I'm about to play sick. You ain't never done it on the innie in the spaceship. And he got your body bending, looking like you shake you. OMG, girl, you don't make sense. So, look, mama, don't be basic. All that talent you got, girl, don't you waste it. The way you wobble and jiggle, the way you shake it. All that cake, I wanna taste it. I'm calling up a word today, I'm about to play sick. You ain't never done it on the innie in the spaceship. And he got your body bending, looking like you shake you. OMG, girl, you don't make sense. Come around, they pipe, I do make it. The mother niggas ain't in, they just make it. Five poodle lace, you roll up, eat some rest with the girl pinkin'. You been naughty and I'ma give you a spankin'. We got no seeds attached to this relation. Pillow talk in your inbox, they be hatin'. They don't know what we built, they can't break it. I want it right now, might not make it home, it's the lifestyle. Soon as I doubt that though, you gettin' piped down. Lights out, we ain't runnin' up a wipe out. Calm down, baby, don't be hostile. Stop out, full of perky, never tap out. I'ma make you pass out, I'ma make it worthwhile. How you feeling like the first time? Trust me, I know how to work, man. Talk, look, mama, don't be basic. All that talent you got, girl, don't you waste it. The way you wobble and jiggle, the way you shake it. All that cake, I wanna taste it. I'm calling up a word today, I'm out of play sick. You ain't never done it on the innie in the spaceship. And he got your body bending, looking like you shake you. OMG, girl, you don't make sense. Talk, look, mama, don't be basic. All that talent you got, girl, don't you waste it. The way you wobble it, jiggle, the way you shake it. All that cake, I wanna taste it. I'm calling up a word today, I'm about to play sick. You ain't never done it on the innie in the spaceship. And he got your body bending, looking like you shake you. OMG, girl, you don't make sense.
Cap Beast, the name of that joint is called Basic, right here inside the Social Lab TM Hyman Radio. What's going on, everybody? Happy Memorial Day. Hope you had a good time hanging out, reflecting on those who have served, those past and present, served, their lives, put their lives on the line to protect us and our freedom here in the United States of America. Again, big up, happy Memorial Day to all. 917-889-3926 is the number. Jump on. We got a special guest tonight. We're talking about a book called Shut 'Em Down with one of the authors. I call her Mama D because she's a friend. But Ms. Dani Smith Mathis is an author of one of the chapters in the book, Shut 'Em Down. She wrote a chapter called Get the Language Right. And we're going to be talking to her up close and personal tonight. Again, 917-889-3926. Shut 'Em Down is the name of the book. It's about black women, racism, and corporate America. Black women, racism, and corporate America. There's a lot of talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion right now in the country. But the one challenge that I think we have as it relates to diversity, equity, and inclusion is that it has to be more than just a checklist. It has to be more than just an item on the checklist, right? We need measurable actions. We need to see change in the workplace as it relates to seeing black faces, but specifically female black faces who are leading the charge, right? We want to be more than employees in the workplace, and we're looking for fair and equal opportunities. 20 black women got together to talk about how they had been discriminated against in corporate America. And it created the work, Shut 'Em Down. And we're going to get into that and much more. But before we go any further, on from the other side of the ATL, give it up for Hot Chocolate. What's going on, man?
Hey.
Happening all the way over there.
Hello, family. Hola. ¿Qué lo que? ¿Qué pasa? Want to say hello to all of my international massive who were here in Atlanta for Memorial Weekend. I hope you all enjoyed your visit with us. And I apologize in advance if it sounds like a small war zone outside of my studio window. It's because there is a fireworks display going on in the neighborhood. So,
lot to celebrate. We ain't mad at the fireworks.
Right. But, you know, fireworks all the time in Georgia, so. For any occasion.
A lot to celebrate in Georgia.
Absolutely.
Definitely a lot to celebrate. Happy Memorial Day again to everyone. And we're just going to get right into the conversation with our special guest tonight. We call her Mama D, but her name is Dani Smith Mathis. I get confused because don't Glenn call you – does Glenn call you Diane or Dani? What do
well,
you call you? I've heard Diane. I've heard Dani.
Yeah. I think people, when they see Dani, they don't realize that it's Dani. It's just Dani with an E, so it's really not that D. But I think because they just, for some reason, always want to say Diane because I guess they just, that's what they see, think they see. You know, your mind plays tricks on you when you think you've seen stuff. So I think that's what
so,
it is.
So
you know,
it's,
people,
it's Dani. It's not Diane. It's not Diane. It's
right. Dani with an E. My given name is Danielle, and my mama called me Dani for short.
I was trying to figure out where
that's
you got
that,
Diane
that
from.
Just told you where I got it from. I got it from Glenn Lundy, who calls her Diane.
Okay.
Yeah. No, actually, Glenn doesn't do it. It's some other people do it. But Glenn doesn't make that mistake. Now, let me correct that. Glenn doesn't make that mistake. I don't know who makes
it. Yeah, I've certainly heard it in our mastermind. So I just wanted to get it squared away because Hot Chocolate just asked them behind stage. Well, that's what I'm calling you, Mama D. But I want to make sure we start the conversation off properly. But before we go any further, I want to bring Madam CeeLo Boston into the convo all the way from Charlotte. What up, Bosty?
What's going on? How y'all doing?
Hello, lady.
Mrs. Charlotte.
We're doing well.
I'm Mrs.
You say you
so, Danny, why don't you just go ahead and officially introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, hey, okay, I'm Dani Smith Mathis, finally known by T as Mama D and others as well, and a lot of people in Charlotte. I'm known as Mama D. I'm a Jersey girl, born and reared in New Jersey, the northern part of Jersey, the real part of Jersey. Newark, born in Newark, reared in Oranges and Maplewood, and I'm the eldest of three daughters and some two wonderful parents, although they have transitioned. And I'm just really happy to be here. I really am. I'm honored. I'm thrilled. I'm sitting up here with a candle I actually made yesterday. It was one of my weekend things to do. I had never made my own candle from scratch, so I made a candle yesterday. And I'm just sitting up here with some with a candle I actually made in the scent that I wanted. So I'm really, really vibing right now, and with a little chi and with you guys. I mean, that's what's up.
A serious vibe going on right now.
No, that's to say she didn't create that zen for real, that zen space for real. Well, ladies and gentlemen, yes. I had the pleasure of meeting Mama D in person weekend before last in Tampa. As previously mentioned, she's a part of a mastermind group that we both participate in. We have the pleasure of sitting up under Glenn Lundy, who is just a phenomenon right now. And so it was a pleasure to meet you in person. But Mama D, give folks a little bit of background on not only is she a VA representative, right? She lives in Hampton, Virginia. So anybody from VA is cool with us on this show.
Yeah.
But outside of that, you know, Mama D, I got to share something that you told the group in Tampa, just so that you all can get an idea of who this woman really is. She shared a superwoman experience, and I got to share this with folks listening all over the world to give you an idea of the power of a black woman who's determined. Now, Mama D told a group of about 12 people that her daughter went to Japan for an event, and, you know, she was supposed to be going with some friends, right, Mama D? And her friends couldn't go. Been stationed, and her daughter, you know, was feeling a little sad. This was on a weekend. Was this a Friday, Mama D?
Yeah. So she was supposed to go to Okinawa with her battle buddy. She had, you know, just left Fort Jackson, and she was stationed over. Her first duty station was Okinawa, Japan. And, his battle buddy said, oh, yeah, so we're going to go to Tokyo for the weekend, and we're going to chill out. First time, you know, to get off the base and go to Tokyo, you know, it's all cool. Well, the battle buddy backed out because she got TDY'd and sent somewhere else for the weekend to work. But my daughter said, oh, I'm still going. I'm going to check out Tokyo myself. So, T, I'll let you finish it.
Well, Mama D, I want you to go in because who could tell the story better than you?
Okay. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
We can.
Okay. So what happened, so long and short was, I was like, look, I'm not letting my child be in Tokyo by herself. Like, we don't know Tokyo like that, right? So... mother I am, and she's my only girl. She's the only, you know, I got three children, and she's my first and only daughter and my first child. So I was like, how about if I meet you over there? So I founded a track club back in Georgia in 2002, and I have some of those athletes who have family that work for the airline, for Delta Airlines. So I called up one of my track meet sisters, and I said, Bobby, I got to get to Tokyo this weekend. And she was like, well, where do you want to go, coach? I said, well, I need to bounce tomorrow. And this was a Thursday. So she said, well, let me see what the flights are looking like. Because, you know, when you fly on a buddy pass, for those of you that don't know, you fly on standby. So it's swing and a miss. And going to Tokyo, which is a 14-hour flight one way. Is it a 14-hour flight? It's a long flight. That's all I can tell you. Long flight one way. Yeah, I think it is. So I was like, man, all right, whatever. She said, well, when are you coming back? I said, I'll be back Sunday because I got to work Monday. She's like, coach, you going for the weekend? I was like, yeah, I'm going for the weekend. So she found me a buddy pass. I went first class. So I go into my boss's office in Charlotte, by the way. Go to my boss's office at 10 o'clock. On that Friday morning, I went in early so I could get some work done. Wasn't anything pressing, so I wasn't leaving anybody hanging. I said, okay, I need to take a half a day, basically. You know, I need to, like, kind of take the rest of the day off because I got to go catch a 12 noon flight. So I go to Charlotte Airport. I catch this 12 noon flight to Tokyo. I'm sure I had a layover somewhere. I just can't remember where it was. It might have been a direct flight because I was all, no, I don't know. It was a layover somewhere. I don't remember. But anyway, it was a long flight. And by the time I got to Tokyo, it was 5 o'clock on Saturday evening, their time.
Oh, wow.
And so I have a play brother who is the bassist, Nathan East, for Foreplay, the jazz group Foreplay, and he was playing at the Tokyo Blue Note. And that's kind of like one of the other reasons why I was going over there, because I was like, my daughter, well, your uncle's playing over at Tokyo Blue Note, and you're going to Tokyo this weekend, so I'm not going to miss that. And this is with the original group, Bob James and Larry Carlton and Nathan East and Harvey Mason. And so Bob James was my daughter's, like my kids grew up on Bob James. They love Bob James. It was like an opportunity for her to meet Bob James. I just kind of didn't want to miss that. And I didn't want to miss the moment. So I had to be there. So I got to Tokyo at 5. I got to her hotel at 7. I took 2 trains from Narita Airport to get to downtown Tokyo. I jumped in the shower, jumped in a cab, went to Tokyo Blue Note. We stayed there till about 12:30 that next morning, you know, midnight, whatever. And I didn't sleep because there was no reason for me to sleep because I was going home the next day, right? So, like, why would I get on their time zone? And I didn't. I just walked around downtown Tokyo in the little kind of sprinkly rain and kind of listened to some jazz and stuff and came back and just chilled out and watched lights and stuff. And then I got her up and we went to brunch. I left at 3, caught my flight. And then I had a layover in Detroit and my son was doing his PhD up in the University of Michigan. So I said, listen, meet me in Detroit. I'll take you to lunch. So I took my son to lunch, met him. And then I got home and watched my 49ers for the Sunday night football and went to work Monday morning.
Wow. That's true jet session. Yeah.
Listen, I mean, somebody's sitting here in the studio with me like, wow, listen, they're giving me a high five for you, like here in the studio sitting with me, and you can hear the other ones. Like, y'all had to hear the story. Like, is that not a real-life superwoman? She went around the world, saw her daughter.
World, right.
Son,
yeah, I saw 2 kids on 2 different continents in less than 12 hours, or 24 hours, whatever it was.
You were back at work at what time? When?
Well, I was back home Sunday night, so I could catch the 8 o'clock game because I'm a 49er fan, and 49ers were playing Sunday night. And I caught that game in my living room in Charlotte at 8:30, 49 on Sunday.
And
I left Charlotte
on Sunday, folks.
Playing no game.
Listen.
Yeah, I wasn't playing. You know, I was just in and out. You know, you just got to do what you got to do, you know?
Right.
Y'all hear what she said? I was just in and out. Ladies and gentlemen, our special guest tonight is Dani Smith Mathis, and she is one of 20 authors of this dynamic book, Shut Them Down. She wrote a chapter that's called Get the Language Right, and we're going to talk about that. I want to get the language right tonight is what the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said. I want to get the language right tonight. Miss Smith Meth. Like, where did the quote come from specific to your story? Because I read the chapter, and I want you to share your story or what would you like to share about your story with the folks tonight. But that's a dynamic quote to start off with. I want to get the language right tonight.
Tonight, yes. So I am – I have a – I'm a writer, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't give a shout-out to my parents, and especially my mom, who actually taught me the physical art of penmanship. And it was through that, that process, that I have learned the rhythm of writing and the rhythm of bringing my thoughts to the paper. And so I started out as a poet. My dad was actually the first African-American to be president of any college or university in the state of New Jersey at Essex County College in Newark. And shortly before he became president, the Newark riots hit. And I remember just writing my poetic journals through the riots, just reading Leroy Jones, who's now Miri Baraka, and just reading Sonia Sanchez and Nikki Giovanni. And so I was reading all of this stuff, right? And then, of course, I was 10 years old when Martin Luther King was assassinated. I remember it coming on the radio, and I remember my mother just being devastated. I remember the time it happened, literally, and where we were in the kitchen and all of that. And so when I fast forward, I went to college at Carnegie Mellon University. I studied creative writing, and then I went off to graduate school because I couldn't figure out what to do with my life after I became a creative writer. I got that awesome degree from Carnegie Mellon, right? And so, you know, Smith family, if you don't know what to do, you just go back to school. So I went, at the time I wasn't married, and I went back to school. And so I went to University of Southern California and wrote my autobiography. And part of my master's thesis, I had to study a biography. And so I studied Martin Luther King Jr. And so I listened to a lot of speeches that just were not popular, you know. And one of them was called "I Want to Get the Language." I want to get the language right. I mean, he had a quote in his speech that said, and it talked about how, you know, everything black is sinister in the dictionary. Look up the word black, and this is after he had actually Malcolm X had kind of gelled a little bit, right? And Malcolm had come back from Mecca, and Malcolm and Martin were kind of gelling. And anyway, so Martin Luther King was talking about, hey, look in the dictionary. You know, somebody told a lie one night. That's where he starts out. He says, somebody told a lie one night. You know, he said everything black is sinister, everything white is high and holy. He said, and then he said, but I want to get the language right tonight. So when I was writing my story for this, my chapter for this book, it came to me that there is a misnomer, to say it nicely, about black women in corporate America, and that is that we are always angry and we are defensive and we're just too aggressive, right? And I will tell you, and I don't mean any harm by saying this, but it is particularly a stigma that has stuck with dark-skinned black women. And I just believe it's a plantation slave mentality, right? So I remembered that quote, and I listened to his speech all over again. I said, let me go back to that speech and listen to that again. I said, yeah, you know, because I do honestly believe that there is a sect of people in corporate America that think that, you know, everything black is sinister and evil and not worth anything. And I believe that for the first time in my 30-year professional career, the antithesis of what I had known as a black woman, with some wonderful white women mentoring me all along the way to catapult me to where I had gotten to that point. I got to a point where I experienced what Martin Luther King was talking about. And so I named my chapter, Get the Language Right, because you're not saying the right thing when you talk about us as angry black women. Dynamic does not mean angry.
Angry black women, I think that is something that we have heard all of our lives, right? You know, what you just said is, I think, interesting because, you know, not only are you talking about the stigma of angry black women, but you said there's a stigma that's associated with dark-skinned black women specifically. Like, yes. Expound on your experience there a little more.
So I grew up in a family that's basically dark-skinned people. I mean, we're not mixed. There's just not a lot of mixture going on with us, right? And I used to I just used to feel like when I was growing up as a young girl, particularly in my adolescence, like it was always the light-skinned, long-haired girls that got the guys, you know. And that were always given the attention. They were always getting the attention. And I was wearing a fro, you know, when I was from the time I was seventh grade to the time I left college. So that was about, you know, that was a long time, you know, from seventh grade to in college. It's like all my life, basically. And then some, I mean, even after that. And so I just never understood that. But then I started reading it. Now, one time I read this book called Certain People. And I can't remember the author of the book, but I remember reading a certain people, and it was talking about the brown bag test. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but there is a brown bag test.
Yeah.
So the brown bag test, so you take a brown bag, and if you were darker than the brown bag, you didn't pass the test. And so you really were not part of the status of what Black America wanted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of how they wanted to be represented. And it really was represented to whom? Probably the white folks. I don't know. Because I never thought there was a time where I was intimidated by that, but then it just took too much energy to stay intimidated by stuff. I don't come from that stock, right? My dad was very, very dark. My mom wasn't that dark, but she was dark enough, and I'm a product of that. So I was happy. I loved my people. You know, I didn't have a problem with, so I just didn't hang with those people. I just didn't.
I can certainly relate. Oh, I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
No. You go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
No, I just wanted to say that I can certainly relate to your point because I am a dark-skinned female and grew up in a family. My immediate family was definitely below the paper bag scale, but some of my extended family, my mother's siblings, a few of them are lighter shade. And it was so weird having the revelation as an older adult, because I really didn't understand it fully or appreciate it for what it was when it was happening, because my aunt, we're making a joke out of it, kind of like, come here, let me see if you pass the paper bag test. And I can vividly remember them putting a paper bag up against my skin and telling me, oh, no, you don't pass. And laughing about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
mm-hmm.
And laughing about it. And realizing how much I'm not even sure if I'm saying this correctly. How much discrimination there is within our race. I'm not sure what the actual word is for that.
Yeah, so
I was trying to figure out
if you were talking about, like, white people. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make sure I was following. Gina, when you said that paper bag had been put up against your skin, and you weren't talking about against white people. You're talking about Black people.
I'm talking about my own family doing that. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, they don't know nothing about that unless they were, you know, around some African American help in their family.
But what did they do? I mean, white people didn't need a brown paper bag. You Black anyway, so they already knew that.
True,
it didn't matter what shade you were, right? So they don't need a paper bag.
And that's why I'm confused. I'm personally confused by the brown paper bag, why anybody
would
need that.
The brown paper bag test
should see that too.
No, that was devised by our people.
That's our people. That's our people scaling up. So I call that the first level of black-on-black crime. To me, that's what that was.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I never heard that before, right? And so
we've been talking about
race and politics forever, and I've never heard that we created that. That's like crazy.
Absolutely.
Okay, and so somebody sitting, Dee Dee sitting here in the studio, Dee Dee said school days. We saw that in school days is what she just said for the first time.
Yep, we did.
Well,
wow.
I'm
sorry. Hey, one minute, folks. If you have a comment, if you just tuned in, our special guest tonight is Dani Smith Mathis. She is one of 20 authors who have contributed to the book Shut 'Em Down. It's about Black women, racism, and corporate America. She's sharing her story tonight. And if you want to weigh in, hit us up, 917-889-3926, 917-889-3926. It's 6:29 on the West Coast, 9:29 here in Atlanta. And the ATL. Miss Smith Mathis, Mama D, please continue with your comment about the paperback.
Yeah, so get the language right, my chapter in the book, is really about getting the language right. Like everything black is not sinister. We all know that, right? Well, I guess most of us know that. Everything black is not evil, you know. And I mean, I just felt that I was compelled to tell my story so that people could get the language right. I'm tired. I was literally just fed up with them, with a narrative, with a wrong narrative about me, not only as a black woman, but just as a person. I had worked for a company for 7 years, and worked feverishly. And the year after I came into that company, I actually won one of the top awards in that company for changing a process and improving a process. And this company is a process improvement company, so that they didn't take that lightly, right? And so 20 or 25 of us out of a couple of thousand employees every year get this award, and it's a big cash award. And I got it. And most people didn't even know who I was. I mean, black or white. They just didn't know who I was. I'd only been there a year. There were people that had been in that company who had worked for 10, 15, 20 years, never got it, and never were going to get it, right? So it's like, what is this? You know, where is this chick coming from? And so I got this award, and then it was cool because when you're in corporate America, the thing that differentiates your success as a black person is not only how corporate America, I'll call it the committee of they, choose to seed you, but whether or not the person that actually hired you is in a position to become your champion. And if you don't have a champion in corporate America, you're toast, especially as a black person. You're just done. You're done. Right. You're going to be trying to figure it out. And it's literally going to be a swing and a miss. And most of the time, you're going to miss because you don't even know when half the time the game is being played.
Right. Wow.
So that's my chapter is about my experience about me missing because I didn't know when the game was being played. Now, is that because I'm ignorant? No. Is that because I'm not a smart woman? No. Is that because I wasn't paying attention? No. That was because, number one, my champion was let go, and number two, it was a matter of circumstance, right? And people being brought into the company that then took charge of over me, and who were intimidated by me. And usually, it's white women are intimidated by black women. It is just simple.
Yeah.
It's simple,
yeah.
And it is the elephant conversation. It is the elephant in the room.
No, absolutely the elephant in the room. The one thing that you just mentioned, sponsor. You said your sponsor had been let go. Just want to call out, folks, the difference between a mentor or a coach versus a sponsor, right?
Right.
She said she had a sponsor. And so I will also say that I know for a fact that she had mentors as well. That helped to empower and strengthen her skill set along the way. That were, correct me if I'm wrong, but they were white women, right? You
Absolutely.
Had white women that actually helped you
Absolutely.
Along your career. So it wasn't until later in your career that you experienced resistance or something that was counter to what you had experienced, right?
Absolutely.
But I wanted to call out sponsor. We all need a sponsor. Women need sponsors. And the one thing that I can say, I am a corporate professional. I've been in the corporate environment for quite some time. And it's very political, right? You have to know, me and Amadi were talking about this offline earlier. You have to know how to navigate in order to be successful. And you know, her question, which is a fair question, she says, but why do we have to navigate at all? Why do we have to navigate? Why shouldn't it just be fair across the board, right? You know, but I think that's a fair question, but it's not, right? And just as she had a sponsor, we all need to recognize that we need sponsors. And what a sponsor is uniquely different from a mentor or a coach. I'm a mentor. I'm a coach, but I'm also a sponsor. And let me tell you my three different roles in each category, right? A coach or a mentor is going to help you to get something done, right? They're going to help to strengthen your skill set. They'll help to guide you. A sponsor is someone who's going to vouch for you, someone who's going to recommend you for a job, put their name on the line. Just because someone is your mentor doesn't necessarily mean they're your sponsor.
True.
One, you got to know the difference so that you can get both of them in your life. And guess what? I've always had more than one sponsor. I've always had more than one mentor. I recommend that for everyone. Mama D, how many mentors and sponsors have you had in your life?
Man. Well, I mean, you know, half the time you don't even realize people are mentoring you when they're mentoring you because you're just ignorant to the process, right? So shout out to those people who fell into that category because of my own ignorance. But the people that I can recall as I matured, my goodness, it's got to be over 20, 25, 30. I don't know. People, you know, I grew up.
Point is many.
There are many. Yeah, there are many. Now, not as many sponsors. I don't know. I would say maybe however many mentors I had, I probably had a third of those were sponsors, you know. But everywhere I went, every job I ever had, I had a sponsor. And, I've been working since I was 17. I'm 63. I'm still working. So, it's been a lot. But
go ahead. I'm sorry. So, CeeLo, you got a question?
No, go ahead.
Oh, was it hot chocolate?
I said that was awesome.
Mama D, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead, okay. T. Let me. I'm your guest. You asked me the question.
Yeah, listen, this is a fluid conversation, my friend. This is a fluid discussion. I mean, we're learning a lot.
Cool.
You know, for me,
yeah.
I think for me, I want you to share tips and information that is going to help, you know, those coming behind you, right? Those coming after you. I know that hot chocolate has worked in a corporate setting before. I know many young women who are in a corporate setting today. I talk to, you know, even some of my peers who have applied for jobs who don't even get interviewed. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I try to encourage them and help them to understand, one, it's not always. Yeah. A lot of times it is about race, but it's not always about race. Right. Sometimes it's about being competitive. Sometimes it's just about being as proficient as possible. But the reality is when the playing field is not even right, you get frustrated when you apply for jobs and you don't even get an interview. I want you to share some insight that encourages, you know, young women specifically who are coming behind you to tell them that to keep on keeping on, right? Put your best foot forward. Don't be discouraged.
Absolutely.
That's what I want you to share with people who are listening all over the world.
So here's the thing. We are not going to change. You can't affect change in someone else as quickly as you can affect change in yourself. So I say affect the change in yourself. So what I mean by that? So I do stuff outside the box. I just do. And I don't ask permission. You don't ask permission, right? You can ask forgiveness, but not ask permission. But here's the thing. So for instance, I was unemployed for a while, And after divorce, I spent 20 years as a stay-at-home mom. And this was after I got my master's, after I had worked for a very large healthcare organization in New Jersey. I was the basically chief of staff or the CEO. And I had a really good career coming out of grad school back in the early 80s. And I had that career for 5 years, and I was also an adjunct faculty instructor at the college where my father was president, right? And so, you know, I was able to, though, go home. And thankfully at the time, I was able to stay home with my children for a long time. But I kept myself relevant. I kept myself relevant by doing freelance work, freelance writing, still using my skills, using my talents, using my gifts of writing, right? So always keep relevant because you don't know what life is going to bring. You do not know what life is going to bring you, okay? And I can tell you I have had two instances where I have been unemployed. I've been homeless. I've lived in a women's shelter after divorce because I just got tired of being beaten in my marriage. And so I left. And when I left with nothing. I didn't want anything. I just wanted my life. But had I not had that master's degree, you know, and I was going through a divorce, but I was still teaching college courses three days a week, every morning, 3 days a week, you know, morning time, 3 days a week. So I had something to fall back, not even fall back on. I had something to fall forward to, you know, because I don't like falling backward. If I'm going to fall, I'm going to fall forward. I'm not falling back.
How do you keep yourself motivated through those difficult times?
Writing. Writing keeps me sane in insane situations.
Mm.
That's what it does for me.
You never experienced like writer's block in those moments?
The only time I experienced writer's block when I was in that domestic violence situation, and I don't know it was so much writer's block as it was I had three small children that I had to focus on. And I didn't have time for myself. I just had tunnel vision. So just like I took that trip to Japan when I was going through that domestic violence situation, I didn't have time to write. But I flipped the script and I put all my energy into my children, teaching them how to be stable individuals in an unstable home so that they could become productive citizens in an unstable world.
Right.
And so that's where my focus was.
I have to commend you greatly because when you were explaining that part of your story, all I could focus on was how I would be trying to juggle all of the chaotic situations that were going on around me. And
right.
I wouldn't have been able to pull time out to myself to be able to write. I wouldn't be able to do it. So my hat's
yeah.
off to you, totally.
So the way I did it was I taught writing. So I taught writing and I stayed relevant. And that's my point. You stay relevant in your gift. You stay relevant in your talent. You stay relevant in your purpose because your gift and your talents and your purpose don't go away. What they may do is lay dormant because you don't use them. It's like muscles, mm-hmm. right? So
mm-hmm.
you've got to stay relevant in your gifts and your talent and your purpose. And when you do that, the circumstances that may pull at those at you doing that are going to be temporary. And you may not get to it like you want to, but I stayed relevant because I taught. I taught writing. I taught English. I taught speech. I taught technical writing. I taught business and communications. I taught.
Sure.
I taught. So that was my outlet. That was my outlet. And then the other thing is, you know, and then eventually I got divorced. I'm sorry, that's my alarm going off. So I'm supposed to be going to bed. Then I got divorced and I was homeless. I just was. I went place to place to place to place to place. And then eventually there was no place to go. And
right.
I went to a shelter. And I wasn't there long, thank God. I had an angel on earth that came and got me. But, and then I had another angel on earth that gave me my life. I mean, I had two angels back to back. One gave me her closing check from a real estate, I became a realtor. I just hustled and became a realtor, and you just do what you have to do. So what I would say to young people is don't get comfortable. Don't ever get comfortable where you are, right? You stay relevant, but don't get comfortable. Do not get comfortable. Always have different things going on, not that are going to tug and pull at you doing things well where you're at. Just don't get comfortable. Because at some point when I got used to that six-figure job that I had, COVID hit and I lost it.
Right.
And that's why I'm on the show, is because I met TM, because I got into Clubhouse, and I'm still unemployed. But it's all good. It's all good because I'm now in my gift and my purpose and my talent. And I'm writing, and the book was published before I got laid off. And so good things have happened from that. But I still have a gift and a purpose and talent that I'm using, so that, you know, I'm okay.
And you are using it in a major way, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are just tuned in, you are listening to the voice of Dani Smith Mathis. She's one of 20 authors who have contributed to a book project called Shut 'Em Down. I need everybody to be on the lookout for Shut 'Em Down right now. Diane, tell folks how they can follow you. Share your social.
Dani just called me Diane. But, yeah.
I did, Dani. It is, like, embedded in my head.
It's all good. If you want a copy of that book, what we're going to do is, if you want to, I'm going to give you an autographed complimentary copy. Go to my website, www.dannysmithmathis.com. Yeah, you're welcome. Dani Smith Mathis, and it's Dani with an E, D-A-N-N-E, Smith Mathis, like in Judge Mathis, no relation, .com. And so you go to DaniSmithMathis.com. And fill out the contact form and tell me, I want to be a chapter reviewer. You review my chapter, I send you a complimentary autographed copy, and just all I ask is that you put your review on Amazon. And it's really simple. But if you don't want to review the chapter, you just want the book, you can still go to my website, www.dannysmithmathis.com, and on the bottom of the front page, you can just click the little red box and order the book.
The book. Hey, it's 9:47 in the ATL, 6:47 out there in L.A. Interesting stories in this book. And I'm just going to read just a few chapter titles. Again, thank you for my autographed copy. One that I actually sent to my mom, you know, who is a growing businesswoman. And, you know, and so just perspective, right? I think a lot of times just knowing what other people have gone through. You know, one thing that you said, Dani, I thought was powerful earlier during our conversation. You said that, you know, your story is my story, right? You said, you know, when somebody wants to really bring about change, they really have to recognize that, you know, your story and your experience really is mine. And that's how we have to look at each other's story. And I'll tell you something, I had never heard that before. I had never thought of it that way before. And so, you know, you gave me something to think about, and really I think it comes down to compassion, right? That's the number one word. And listen, because we're so open and transparent on this show, like last year sometime, if not in 2019, it might have been 2019, CeeLo Boston, who's out of Charlotte, told me one day flat out that I was insensitive. It was like a slap in the face, a jab in the chest, but I paid attention, I listened, right? And the next question was like, okay, so tell me why. You remember that, Cecil?
Yes.
It was like, well, tell me why. And she gave me perspective, right? But I bring that up to say this. If we are going to debunk and eradicate racism in America, we got to be willing to give feedback, receive feedback, and apply feedback. We got to be willing to have the tough conversations.
Okay,
you got to be willing
right
to hear the stuff that you don't want to hear. You know what I'm saying?
Truth,
and so,
truth away
you know,
to
you got to, you know, yeah, you know, you just got to sometimes just receive what people are saying. And I didn't take it personal, right? I ain't want to clip her, you know what I'm saying, when she walked past me and nothing like that. I ain't want to push her down, you know, even though she already on a, you know, on a little crutch. You know, she already on a crutch. You know, I ain't want to kick the crutch from under her. You know what I'm saying? Just, nothing like that. It was it was honest. And, folks, if we gonna bring about change in America, if we're going to bring about change in corporate America, we have to be the change that we want to see. It starts with being honest. We got to.
Yeah, and I believe that. I truly believe that. But I also believe that the onus is not on us anymore. And I believe the onus is on people
totally
who are particularly in the DE&I space and say, okay, we're committed to this, but you have to have the conversation. Truth awaits the conversation. I'm going to say that. Hashtag truth awaits the conversation. And Mike, if it's my truth, then it's your truth too. And you may not know about it. And so you got to be willing to hear my truth about you.
I think that's very deep, and I had never heard the adage that your truth was my truth either. So I find that very intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, that is just how that is. I mean, that's what our ancestors were fighting for. They're like, listen, this is what's going on, and see, this is where in the corporate world, this is where this whole gaslighting thing is huge, right? You know, because that's what happened to me, and I talked about that in my chapter. You know, and it happens in relationships. It happens in my domestic violence relationships where people try to make you think you're the crazy one, you know? And that's what white folks have done for centuries, trying to make us think that we're wrong or we're making this stuff up, and it's not that deep. And, you know, you only got 50 lashes. We could have given you 100. What?
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, like, For real, we having that conversation? No, that's not the conversation we need to have. We need to have truth about the conversation. Like, why are you lashing me in the first place?
Right.
And just like you said, we talked earlier about, you know, the whole playing field. Like, if you think about it, if I am a dynamic black person, I'm already behind the eight ball. I might get a seat at the table, but you don't want me to talk.
Right.
Because then when I talk, I may sound more intelligent because I might be more intelligent. And if I'm more intelligent, then now you're intimidated. So now I have this whole emotional thing going on, and I keep saying to people, don't necessarily buy into this emotional intelligence thing, because that too has racism at its core, some of it.
Right.
Because you had to be emotionally intelligent to survive a plantation, and that's, to me, what corporate America is. It's a plantation.
Modern day.
The name of the book is called Shut 'Em Down, folks. Danny Smith Mathis is one of 20 authors. It's about black women, racism, and corporate America. She is offering tonight to our listeners an opportunity for you to review her chapter in the book. She will send it to you. But, you know, you can also purchase it, and you can go to DannySmithMathis.com. That is D-A-N-N-E Smith, M-A-T-H-I-S, not Mathis, right? Because I didn't send the wrong emails and everything, spelled the name wrong. I didn't call the name wrong, but it's Danny Smith Mathis, folks, M-A-T-H-I-S.
Yeah, like Judge Mathis, y'all.
Hit her up.
Some of y'all. Yeah, just hit me up.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I commend you on your courage for telling your story. I know that there is power in testimonies, right? We are better because we know that stories like yours exist, right? And folks, you know, the idea is that we want to take this book and we want to use this book as a tool.
Right.
Right? in our homes to share the stories so that we can be aware, right? This is what I believe. I believe that preparation eliminates anxiety. I'll say it again all the way back there. Preparation eliminates anxiety. If you prepare enough, you won't be anxious when it's time to show up. And let me give you a hack. A hack is all you got to do is, like, read, like, one or two chapters ahead. Because ain't nobody gonna if you read one or two chapters ahead, you already the expert. Boom. That's the hack. You feel me?
Yeah.
Am I telling the truth, folks?
Let me tell you the hack. The hack my dad used to tell me, my dad used to say, this is my dad's hack. Two hacks. Get up before white folks and read the first, read the far left side of the Wall Street Journal every morning, Monday through Friday. After you get up, as soon as you get that, go get that paper and read it. That was my hack coming up
like
in the 70s.
I like it right now.
The far left side of the journal. What is on the far left side of the journal?
Everything that's important to white folks in America.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that was kind of the running joke in our family, but I think there was some...
No. I get it.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to tell you. And I mean, you know, and trust and believe, I'm going to say like white folks. Some of my best friends are white, so I'm not the one. I have a daughter-in-law that's white. I've got nieces and nephews that half black, half Italian. I've got cousins that are straight up white. So we don't have that problem. I grew up in the UN, so I don't want to misrepresent. I'm not, you know, I might sound a little rough on this, but I'm not that way. You know, I'm just truth. Right now, it's about telling truth. It's about telling truth. And this, my truth is that my house was a UN. My house was a UN growing up, literally. I mean, we had people from all over the world coming in our home, right? And so that wasn't a problem for me. When it became a problem for me was when I became a problem to them, because they were intimidated by me not having a problem with a whole lot of stuff that they were having problems with. And it just boils down to that's part of your intellectual property. See, we think of intellectual property as, you know, our computers and stuff, you know, all this digital stuff. Your intellectual property is your values. That's where your intellectual property begins, is when you say, it's not my issue. You know, my mantra is, you know, it's not my clown, not my circus. That's my intellectual property. You're not my clowns, you're not my circus. I'm not going to that show.
I love that. Yes,
you may want to sell me a ticket. You might want to sell me a ticket to your show, but I'm not interested in that show.
Not
you know?
My monkey, not my show. Mm-hmm.
Right. No, it's just I'm just not. You know, so we have to start defining things for ourselves. We have to start defining things for ourselves. I mean, just like we, the brothers and sisters, did back in the 60s and the 70s, Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Get the language right." Whose language are you listening to? Whose narrative are you listening to? Not just about yourself, but about the things that you own, the things that are important to you. Whose language are you listening to? Define that for yourself. So your internal, you know, alarm can go off when you hear something antithetical to that. You know that that's something that you need to give pause to and you need to assess. Right? And you need to say, am I going to go forward with that or not? So for me, I chose to leave my job because I did not like the language. I didn't like the narrative that they had already said about me. And the narrative changed. See, here's the thing. The narrative changes depending on who is your champion and who is your mentor. Or if you have one in the first place. So when you stop having champions and mentor, trust and believe in a corporate world, that narrative about you is getting ready to change.
Right.
It's just a matter of time.
Because you don't have anybody. Yeah, nobody has your back at that point. Right.
But nobody's saying good things about you, period. So you become a target. And if you are in a position that, you know, it can be eliminated because trust and believe, somebody every year is looking at every position in that company and saying, where can we cut?
Absolutely.
And your name might come up.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have enjoyed this discussion tonight with our special guest, Ms. Dani Smith Mathis. We're taking a conversation over the clubhouse right now. You can actually go over and join us as we keep this conversation going. Hey, we appreciate you. You are now a friend to this show, and thank you for being so transparent tonight. Ms. Dani Smith Mathis. Again, Dani, tell folks how they can get the book, and we're going to transition over to Clubhouse.
Thank you so much. Go to www.Dani with an E, D-A-N-N-E, smithmathis.com, and hit that little red box on the first page, and you got it. If you want to review my chapter, I will send it to you personally and for free. I'll give you a complimentary autograph copy, but you still have to go to the website and fill out the contact form and let me know you want to be a chapter reviewer, and we'll definitely see that that happens for you. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
No, absolutely. It's been our exact absolute pleasure. We are headed over to the clubhouse, everybody. Good night.
TM Hyman Live Talk Radio Show. TM Hyman Live Talk Radio Show. TM Hyman Live Talk Radio Show. Talk radio show.